If there is one single fatal systems error in human civilization, it's the illusion that as human beings, we are somehow separate from the natural world. In reality, we're part of nature, not apart from it. But is there also more to the story? Almost all indigenous traditions, our old-growth cultures, describe the sacred geography of a world where everything is alive and related. They make no separation between matter and spirit. We are part of a much larger intelligence embodied in all life and in the universe.
In the reality of many realities, how we see what we see affects the quality of our reality.
We are these memories running through your veins, racing across your mind, beating in your heart. We are
children of earth and sky. DNA, descendant, now ancestor. Human being, physical spirit, bone, flesh, blood, as spirit.
In a universe of beings intimately related, the biosphere is our family. And that family has family values. And the family values of this American land, the traditional family values of this American land, are gratitude, respect for nature's cycles, the sacred, harmony, and above all, reciprocity. Don't take something without giving something back.
Truly restoring the earth will not be achieved with technical solutions alone. It also demands a change of heart, a fearless exploration of what it means to be a whole human being, who we are, how we are, where we belong, and what we're responsible for.
We seriously need to examine our perception of reality, because everything that happens and unfolds is through perception. So reality is, all right? But then reality is also as we perceive it. And so for the damage that the human beings are causing to the life entity of Earth, that's the disease. Because our perception of reality is not synchronized to the reality of reality.
Prototype people, rigid suit trolls near brain dead, under for spacious skies gathering storm clouds, rule of law, a falling axe in stormtroopers' hands, cruel class deceivers claim God for their sign, making up stories with places for meanings to hide. Dracula drinks deeply while nourishing his trap, the love of mankind, an alluring narcotic rap.
Babel.
Sex
Babel
does love, sex is life. and sex meant death. Homosexual needles as if laboratories don't exist. Bacterial warfare, AIDS, testament to death man's kiss. Drug master using drugs to blame poverty and crime. Money master cashes in on the people's golden light. Skulls and crossbones uniformly waiting in time. Raging peace, stone Satan spoiling for the fight. In wars for souls, prophets are in casualties. Spilling scenes from fables and other realities. Tinted eyes. Concepts of love possess concepts of love. Growing up fears traveling faster than light. Love is as blind as the people who see. Emotional playgrounds intense as battleground. User words for protection leave a hollow sound. The prince and the maiden don't stand a chance. A fiddler plays, but they're too confused to dance. Their love was smooth, then the love was rough. The lessons of living didn't teach them enough. There's the man, the woman, and all those dualities. The material, fables, and other reality.
Fables, they are not, and they're no way. Reality, they are not, and they're no way.
While the mute proclaimed the glories, deaf man listened closely as he danced. Seeing into pictures blind man painted. Mother Goose and the Brothers Grimm laughed knowingly up their sleeves. Grown-ups are the children's children, captured and taught what to believe. Sampling fables and other realities.
To resynchronize our individual collective realities, we need to recognize who we are. And I think that, see, and I think that that's not happening right now. I think that we've been programmed and distorted and had programmed perceptions of reality put into our imagination and our intelligence that were deliberately put there so that we would not recognize who we are. Because then the chaos of our lives is much easier to perpetuate and create. People are rushing out of political urgencies and economic urgencies and desperations, rushing to create movement that in the long run is not really moving anything, right? Except we went through some motion, but we didn't in the end really get anywhere. And I say that because my whole life, I've seen the activists, social consciousness, I've seen the good, we'll call the good guys. But the bad guys are still the bad guys. And the good guys are more desperate than they ever were. See, so something's missing. You know, and I know our intentions and our motives are good, our ideals, I know all that's good. So what exactly is it that's missing? And I think that the missing part is that we don't recognize ourselves, and because we don't recognize the reality of who we are, we don't recognize power. So I think we really need to understand who we are as human beings and the reality of what it means to be a human being, because any relationships we have to the reality of power itself, the way reality has defined it, isn't through that relationship of human being being human.
I'm a member of the Society of Indian Psychologists. And at one of our gatherings a number of years ago, one of the students had taken on as a project to go back and interview her grandmother. She was Navajo. And she asked her grandmother if her grandmother could remember any old Navajo insults. What would a really insulting thing be to say in the old way? And her grandmother thought for a really long time, and she said, well, it would be translated, he acts as if he has no relatives.
The worst Navajo insult is to accuse someone of living as if they have no relatives. The concern is that the dominant modern view of ourselves is fundamentally separate, of our individual isolation, of our not being related, may be killing us. This is the concern coming from indigenous communities today.
Relationship, I guess, is what is really fundamental to our existence. So often you'll hear us call the winds our grandfathers, or you'll hear us call the thunder and the lightning our grandfathers, and the moon our grandmother, and the sun our eldest brother, and the earth our mother, and the earth our grandmother. We say that because it denotes a relationship of love, a very close relationship of appreciation. That's how Native people kept their relationships with the earth itself.
I really believe that a culture that is disconnected from nature goes insane. A people who have no direct connection to nature lose their minds. Whereas if we make nature the center of our lives, it's a very different relationship. We make sacred the things that we think support us. So these are the things we've made sacred.
The bottom, the bottom, the bottom. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you two can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before the name goes on. One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady. $3-4. We got a year-end clearance. We got our white sale and a smoke-damaged furniture. You can drive it away today. Act now, and receive as our gift. Our gift to you, they come in all colors, one size fits all. No muss, no fuss, no spills, you tired of kitchen drudgery, everything must go. Going out of business, going out of business, going out of business sale. 50% off original retail price, skip the middle man. Don't settle for less, how do we do it, how do we do it? Volume, volume, turn up the volume. You heard it advertised, don't hesitate, don't be caught with your drawers down. Don't be caught with your drawers down. You can step right up. Step right up. That's right, it fillets and chops, dice and slices. Never stops. Lasts a lifetime. Mows your lawn. And it mows your lawn. And it picks up the kids from school. It gets rid of unwanted facial hair. It gets rid of embarrassing age spots. It delivers a pizza. And it lengthens. And it strengthens. And it finds that slipper that's been at large under the chaise lounge for several weeks. And it plays a mean rhythm master. Makes excuses for unwanted lipstick on your collar. And it's only a dollar. Step right up. It's only a dollar. Step right up. Cause it forges your signature. Not completely satisfied. Mail back unused portion of product for complete refund of price of purchase. Step right up. Please allow 30 days for delivery. Don't be fooled by cheap imitations. You can live in it. Living it. Laughing it. Loving it. Swimming it. Sleeping it. Living it. Swimming it. Laughing it. Loving it. Remove embarrassing stains from contour sheets. That's right. And it entertains visiting relatives. It turns a sandwich into a banquet. Tired of being the life of the party. Change your shorts. Change your life. Change your life. Change into a 9-year-old Hindu boy. Get rid of your wife. And it walks your dog. Doubles on sacks. Doubles on sacks. You can jump back, Jack. See you later, alligator. See you later, alligator. And it steals your car. It gets rid of your gambling debts. It quits smoking. It's a friend. It's a companion. It's the only product you will ever need. Follow these easy assembly instructions. It never needs ironing. Well, it takes weights off hips, bust, thighs, chin, midriff, gives you dandruff. And it finds you a job. It is a job. And it strips the phone company, free tape, then finding, never needs finding, never needs finding. Gets rid of blackheads, heartbreakers, psoriasis. Christ, you don't know the meaning of heartbreak, buddy. Come on, come on. Come on, come on. Cause it's effective, it's defective. It creates household odors, it disinfects, it sanitizes for your protection. Gives you an erection, it wins the election. Why put up with painful coins any longer? It's a redeemable coupon, no obligation, no salesman will visit your home. We got a jackpot, jackpot, jackpot. Prizes, 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 all work guaranteed. How do we do it? 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 We need your business. We're going out of business. We'll give you the business. Get on the business end of all. Going out of business, say we'll receive all. Free brochure. Free brochure. Read the easy to follow assembly instructions. Batteries not included. Send before midnight tomorrow. Terms available. Step right up. Step right up. Sit right up. You got it, buddy. A large print giveth and a small print taketh away. Sit right up. You can sit right up. You can sit right up. Come on, sit right up. Get away from me, can you? Sit right up.
But there's a conflict in that a farming people are terrified of the wild. A hunter-gatherer people, a foraging people, the wild is what sustains them. But when you're an agricultural people, the wild is where the deer come from and eat your crops, and the bugs come from and eat your crops, and the bears come and tear down your fences, and those wild people out there come. And Sitting Bull and his people had no use for our laws. I mean, there was nothing, and by our, I mean people of European descent, my ancestors, had no use for these laws. There was nothing that the U.S. government or agriculture could offer them. They really were the freest people in the world. And that is a frightening concept to an agricultural people. People you can't control, you have nothing to offer them, and so we exterminate them. That's pretty much our response to that. So what this transition from hunter-gatherer to agriculture really was our domestication. We domesticated a lot of plants and a lot of animals, but we're the most domesticated species of all. I mean, my dog is way wilder than I am. You know, I'm a lot more tame.
Do you feel it in the sunshine? Do you feel it in the rain? In the ocean, when the waves are clear, do you feel it in the evenings, when the moon is up? Do you feel it in your bones, when it fills you up? Oh yeah, yeah, spreads good luck. Mother Earth, Mother Earth.
First, if we look at the spread of agriculture, agriculture arose in a bunch of different places around the planet in different ways, but the principal center for it was in the Middle East, and this was grain agriculture here. And grain agriculture is a particularly aggressive form of agriculture. If you're growing yams or even corn or beans or squash or something like that, you can just poke a few seeds or tubers in the ground kind of in any little clear spot and they'll probably do just fine. With grains, you really need to clear the soil, till the soil, and it requires a good bit of processing as well. So it requires large areas that are devoted really to nothing but grains, as opposed to something like a potato or squash or anything like that that just sort of trail up around the existing vegetation. So it's a clear-cut type of agriculture. It really requires a very aggressive treatment. It also spreads very easily because you clear the ground. You can do it almost anywhere, right? You can clear the ground and anywhere the climate will permit your grains to grow, you can grow them there. And what grain agriculture really means is you can store it better than almost any other form of food. You can store it for a long time. You dry it and store it. So this means you get a storable surplus. And this is another huge game changer. When you can store a surplus of something, all these other things begin to happen that are prompted by that, that are made necessary because of it. The first is when you've got, you know, you're storing food over the winter, you need a place to store it. You need a technology. You need buildings. You also need someone to make sure it doesn't get stolen. You need, you know, police or security or goons or whoever it is, somebody. So you need a security state to protect it. You need someone to parcel it out, and this is the lord, and actually the lord of the manor, kind of the origin of the English word, the old English word lord, is plaford, which is literally loaf ward, the keeper of the loaf, the keeper of the grain. That's what lord, that's the origination of the word lord, is the keeper of the grain. So it's literally the person who controls your food supply is the lord, the earthly lord. You need accountants to measure it, to make sure it's all divvied up fairly or according to the rules, which means you need rules to regulate who gets it and when, how it's divided out, and you need punishment for people who disobey these rules. So this whole set of hierarchical regulations and powers comes out of a storable surplus. So it's a pretty dangerous thing that horticultural, meaning pre-agricultural or non-agricultural people, and hunter-gatherers don't have anywhere near as much. Their hierarchies are much flatter.
They came in the night and they came in the day. They came till they took it all away. And all they left was the background. No light can be found. Didn't give a reason and they didn't say why. Millions of trees had to die. In the name of progress was all they'd say. Step aside and get out of our way. Where we gonna go when the rain don't make our garden grow and the soil's too dry for our seeds to sow? How long till we learn? You play with fire and you're sure to burn. A one-way ticket with a no return. Cause where we gonna go? Well, I don't know. Tell us technology's a wonderful thing. Stop to imagine the destruction it brings. One step forward and two steps back. Go from the light and into the black. They feed us with lies and they treat us like fools. Stop to realize it's a game we all lose. On the road to self-destruction with every step we take. The ship's sinking fast and no escape. What I wanna know a threat to all below, and our pollution stops our rivers flow. It's time you and me, we take responsibility. It's a fragile world in dire need, 'cause where we gonna go? Well, I don't know. Finding life on Mars doesn't make any sense to me. I try to live at the bottom of the ocean. Some things are not meant to be. What I want to know is where we're going to go. The oceans rise and the strong winds blow, and the temperature melts the ice and snow. Time to wait, won't be long and it'll be too late. In this together and we're all at stake, 'cause where we gonna go, I don't know.
There are concepts we need to be examining, and like the idea of freedom. I think freedom, I don't trust it. I don't trust it at all. You know? Because I don't think life is about freedom. I've come to that conclusion. Life isn't about freedom. Life is about being free and responsibility. And there's a difference between being free and freedom. You live in this illusionary conceptual freedom, but you don't feel free. So obviously there is a difference. And you go to the vast majority of human beings, citizens, all right, that live in this conceptual freedom, how many of them feel free? All right, how many of them feel free from economic threat? How many of them feel free that, well, I'm going to be taken care of when I get old, or if I get sick, somebody, you know, it's going to be okay? How many of them feel free from what would be just called crime? Or how many of them feel free from being in a secure relationship because they know they found that in their relationships? So in this whole land of freedom, nobody feels free. But we've been programmed to rah-rah the chant, freedom, 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 freedom. And now we come back in, and the most basic part of that is that for me to stand and say I believe in freedom, then that means that predator, that racist, that pedophile, all right, that land raper, they have the freedom. Because who am I to say they don't have the freedom? See, so maybe life isn't about freedom. Maybe life is about responsibility. No maybe to it. Life is about responsibility. As human beings, we were given intelligence. And this is how we manifest our power. That gift was a gift of responsibility. We have a responsibility to use our intelligence clearly and coherently. And when we understand that responsibility, then we will be free. I'm not saying oppressors go. I'm talking about being free. Creating that energy, individual, collective energy, mass of being free, then that automatically changes everything. See, so we really need to understand that's our power, not the economic, religious, political, social system. We don't really have power in there. We're just in there. Our power is in us.
By the guns of market-hungry military profiteers, whose word is a swamp and whose brow is smeared with the blood of the poor. Who rob life of its quality, who render rage a necessity, by turning countries into labor camps, modern slavers and dragons champions of freedom. And cynical instrument who makes the gun into a sacrament, the only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations. poetry of ideology. North, south, east, west, kill the best and buy the rest. It's just spend a buck to make a buck. You don't really give a flying fuck about the people in misery. Takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. It's either paid off local bottom feeders, passing themselves off as leaders. Kiss the ladies, shake hands with the fellows, and it's open for business like a cheap bordello, and they call it democracy. 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 But see the loaded eyes of the children too, trying to make the best of what the wickeds do. One day you're gonna rise from your habitual feast to find yourself staring down the throat of the beast they call a revolution. IMF, dirty MF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. And they call it democracy. And they call it democracy.
Hopi and other Aboriginal peoples have warned for decades of planetary-scale ecological breakdowns if the laws of nature are not respected. More and more eminent scientists are raising dramatic concerns about global climate change, and the myriad interconnected effects of destructive human practices are increasingly coming to light. If the root problem is at the values level, what does that really mean?
And I'm going to say this is what I think is the fundamental conflict on this topic between the indigenous world and the rest of the European world.
Turtle Clan Seneca, John Mohawk, is a professor of American Studies at the University of New York at Buffalo and author of the book Utopian Legacies.
The European world saw its problems, and by the way, its biggest problem was that people couldn't get enough food to eat. They couldn't produce enough food in Europe to eat. So they're always hungry, and there was always famine going on. It was always a problem that way. When it got to the Americas, there was plenty to eat. And it's kind of an interesting thing. A big piece of the reason why people came was because the Americas had a lot to eat. And then they destroyed that. They destroyed that. When they came, this was an edible landscape, first rate edible landscape. And you bring a bunch of sheep and cows and this and that and the other thing there, cut down all the trees and do this and the other thing for a couple hundred years, you don't have an edible landscape anymore. But what was at work was that on the one side there was a willingness to take on nature and to battle nature right to the end. So the thinking, even around technology, the application of science to problem solving, is how to outsmart nature. That's what biotechnology is about, right? How to get what you want out of nature without nature's help. You can do it yourself. And you look at the native thing, and the native thing was a question of how to cooperate with nature. They had fought nature, trust me. They had fought, they had put up the battles they could, they did their best. And I think they kind of came to the conclusion that that's not the way to go. So they asked the question, okay, what happens if we try to go along with nature, you know? Like instead of trying to plant the blueberries where down there by the lake where they always get flooded, why don't we plant more blueberries where nature already put blueberries in the already existing blueberry patch? Make that bigger. And so when you look at what happened, it isn't true that the Indians were existing in a static relationship with nature when the Europeans came. The Indians were taking care of the land so that it grew grass, so that it fed deer, so that the deer were harvested. The deer were their domesticated animals, and the buffaloes and everything else. The Indians were right on top of it. They knew just what they wanted. They had a very sophisticated system of food management going on. Very sophisticated. But it was cooperative with nature. Now, some of the stuff that goes on here in the pioneers elicits that. It's also about that. But what happens when you do that? What happens when you stop having war with nature? Doesn't it also mean that you have to go back to the basic questions of fundamental fairness? But of course, the Indians asked that question not about human to human. They asked that about human to land, human to animal, human to bird, human to fish, human to everything. The thinking in the Indian country was essentially one of respect, just what she said, those values that she said, and the question was, how do we live those in practicality? It wasn't just how do we voice those, not just have ceremonies about it, but how do we actually live that? And I think, in a way, we're at the very, very beginning of that consciousness, you know, and that shift of consciousness there. But I can't help this thought. If you read a lot of the literature of the expressions of the Indians, from the Columbus moment till now, it's kind of an interesting conversation, because the Indians are constantly imploring the Europeans to rethink this. They're forever saying, you got this wrong. You know, first off, you're not fair, which was first off the most obvious thing. But then as they went on, they kept saying, you know, you've got to use your mind to try to find a way to come to the best possible outcome. And I think that their answer was, well, the best possible outcome is I make money. And that's not what they meant. They meant the best possible outcome for the quality of life. Take money out of the equation and tell me what the quality of life is.
So a couple more things. I'm just going to diss farming for a while, just based on the agricultural civilization and the things that it does. It inexorably, it's built in a population increaser. And the way it works is that you grow more food in a small area. That triggers people to breed. An ample food source, biologically, being a biologist, makes women more fertile, raises sperm counts in men. When you have a good food source, it just does that to you. So you have more children, and then more people need more food, so you clear more land to feed those more people, and it's this positive feedback loop that goes on. Another thing about grains is that they can be converted into soft food, so you can wean children far younger than you can if you wait for their jaws to develop. That's usually age 3 or 4 before they can chew meat and things like that. And women who are nursing tend not to get pregnant. So by reducing the age of weaning down to very young, now you can have pregnancies pretty much as often as it's possible to be pregnant. And that has really been the pattern for a lot of agricultural societies for a long time. I was just reading a biography of Teddy Roosevelt a while ago, and it mentioned that both of his grandmothers had 15 to 17 pregnancies. And that was pretty typical. So you can imagine the social effects of being pregnant from menarche to menopause pretty much constantly. Oh, and grains are very easily converted into calories. And meat is good for building muscle tissue, but it doesn't release a lot of energy when it's metabolized, whereas grains release a lot of energy. And that is the signal to breed, is getting that big energy dose. It says, we live in a really good environment right now, so let's have lots of babies. Another myth is that when we found agriculture, people lived longer and got healthier. And it turns out that actually the opposite is true. They now have archaeological sites in Turkey and another place called Dixon Mounds in Illinois and a lot of other places where they actually have a skeletal record of people before agriculture and then making the transition into agriculture. And here are the findings. People die sooner after agriculture comes in. The lifespan declines by between 20% and 30% after agriculture compared to hunter-gatherer people. The same people in the same place, they find they die sooner. There are far more degenerative diseases. This woman here, this Egyptian drawing or sculpture, she is using something called a quern, which is a kind of a rolling pin that you use to grind with. And you can see what she's doing. She's kneeling on the ground. And she's rolling this thing back and forth, and you do that all day. So you can imagine the repetitive motion injuries that you're going to have. Spine problems show up, arthritis shows up, wrist problems, knee problems, neck problems that don't exist in pre-agricultural people through this really repetitive labor. Far more epidemics. Those of you who've read Jared Diamond's great book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, most of our epidemic diseases, not all, but most of them, come from domesticated animals. Chicken pox, smallpox coming from cows, measles and mumps coming from pigs. Far more epidemic diseases begin to occur. People got shorter after agriculture. Both men and women lost about 4 inches in height after agriculture came along in those same sites that have that clean record. And another myth that needs to be overturned is that famine becomes much more common after agriculture. That foraging people can pretty much always find food, and their population numbers are lower, so they're not putting the pressure on the land. And they can find food even in really bad conditions, whereas if you have a bad crop year, speaking of this year, sure looks like it, there is no food. And so there's a relationship between farming and famine. The great French historian Fernand Braudel was one of the first historians to look at how regular people live, not just the lords, the kings and queens, but how the average person lived in Europe. And here's the record of famine. We've got 7 major famines in the 15th century. These are the 13, 11, 16 famines in the 18th century, continent-wide, killing 20% to 30% of the population. You know, 16 continent-wide famines in the 18th century. And that's not including the minor famines, the local famines. So agriculture does not prevent starvation. It actually increases the odds that you will starve. Farming consumes a lot more land than just its footprint. You have the cropland, but you also need a lot of land for the animals, fodder, fertilizer, unless you're using fossil fuels, but to grow the fertilizer crops. John Jevons up in Willits calculates that you need roughly 4 acres of fertility-producing land to have 1 acre of crop-producing land. So it's a much bigger footprint than it looks like. Then you need land for mines and timber and all the supplies and things like that, and then you need land to house the people who are working on the farm as well. So it's got a way bigger footprint. Agricultural people work really hard. Foragers can gather a week's worth of food in 3 to 4 hours in a good environment, whereas a farmer needs a lot more time to gather food. It's really hard work. And so it's not a coincidence that when Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, God said to them, "Thou shalt earn thy bread by the sweat of thy face." Now, it was going to be hard work now for them. Farming societies are not very diverse compared to hunter-gatherer societies. Hunter-gatherer societies, if you compare, say, the Yanomamo in South America with the Inuit, with the San Bush people in Africa, they are so different that they don't even have words for many of the things that they do differently. Whereas farming people are fairly uniform. There's definitely some diversity. But industrial people, a subset of farming called industrial people, there's really only one industrial culture, right? That's the McDonald's culture is pretty much all we really allow. So not as much diversity. Agriculture is portable, as I was mentioning before. You just clear the land so you can spread it. It leads to conquest. If we look at how agriculture has been spread, particularly grain agriculture, when it moved from Europe to North America, that's pretty typical of how grain agriculture spreads. That was not a nice story, and it's pretty typical. The farmers move, not just farming, but the agricultural people move along with their crops and take over the land.
Fruit of my trees, fish of my seas, wheat of my field, everything you need. You act like I never gave you enough. I gave you my very own body to suck. You act like I never gave you enough. I gave you my very own body to suck. Waters are false, lack is a lie. Your impulse for ruin is glory denied. And us. The things you do are hurting us. Violence is not virtuous. The things you do are hurting us. Treat me. Love me.
love me, treat me like you love me. You're not an occupying army, you are of me. Treat me like you love me.
It is time to rise up. Remember who we are.